It was big news in July 2006 when Fidel Castro disappeared from public life because of a mysterious illness and eventually ceded official power to his brother Raul. Now, new details on these events are in a book by journalist Ann Louise Bardock. It's called Without Fidel, A Death Foretold in Miami, Havana, and Washington. Ms. Bardock joins us from NPR West in Culver City, California. Welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Let's start with that illness that did leave Fidel Castro apparently bedbound for months on end. It was, you know, rumored to be something abdominal or intestinal. What did happen?
What happened was that Fidel Castro needed emergency intestinal surgery for a condition that is often referred to as malignant diverticulitis, at least by certain surgeons. And it is not a metastatic condition. It is not a cancer, but it often has the same mortality, morbidity rates as cancer. And in fact, it can take you out much faster, which in fact was the case with Fidel Castro. He's had it for some time. He's had previous surgeries. And what happened was that he had a very severe attack and it prompted emergency surgery. And as usual, being Fidel Castro, he commandeered the situation. He overruled his team of medical advisors, his surgeons, and he told them how to do the surgery because he did not want to endure two surgeries. He gambled, and he said he did not want a colostomy, which is standard. He said he wanted the resectioning to be done all at once. It was a disaster. It was ill-advised. It would be ill-advised for a man half his age. And he very nearly died, and he hovered in that state for several months. He lost 50 pounds by the end of 2006, and he required multiple surgeries. And he's not the man he once was, nor will he ever be.
Well, he did get the colostomy, too, in the end, right?
Yes, in order to save his life, he needed it. And there's a very poignant scene in the book that when they told him that he needed a colostomy to save his life, Fidel Castro, who is a singularly unsentimental man, he broke down in tears, according to somebody who was there, and he wept throughout the day.
Now, of course, at the time, very little of this got out. Can you tell me about what took place to keep this information from being publicized?
Well, Castro functions in a really hermetically sealed environment. It is completely off limits to discuss Castro's, not even personal life, even a schedule that has never been released in Cuba. You might find out that he's even going to an international summit the day before or the day of. And when it comes to his personal life, it is particularly so. No one in Cuba publicly discusses this. No reporters are kept in the loop, as it were. And foreign reporters who dare to do so will very quickly lose their visa de prensa. They will not be getting a return trip. I can personally attest to this as someone who's lost my visa on multiple occasions. And one must be very careful because they're very smart. They read this stuff, and punishment and retribution is certainly happens to those who are suspected of indiscretion.
Hmm. Now, despite this devastating illness, it took months for Fidel Castro to finally cede official power to his younger brother. Can you tell us about Raul Castro?
Raul Castro is a very interesting man in his own right, and no one for a minute should doubt the intense and successful partnership between Fidel and Raul Castro. I mean, one might say that they are perhaps the most successful political brother team in history. Certainly, they have endured and lasted much longer than, say, the Kennedys. And Fidel was very much always Raul, his younger brother's mentor. Interestingly, after the so-called triumph of the revolution, Fidel told Raul, look, you're very good at organization, you're very good with handling the armed forces, but you're not much of a public speaker. And he arranged for Raul to have locution lessons. It never quite took. And
he thought he should be able to go on for hours and hours on end like his big brother.
Exactly. And you will see that they're almost the counter opposite in that regard.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with Anne-Louise Bardock about her latest book on Fidel Castro. Now, there was talk that Raul Castro might, once he took over, liberalize the Cuban economy, might ease up on political dissidents. But we've just very recently had a Human Rights Watch report that was really devastating in this area. Has he made any changes?
Yes, he has. He's made what I regard as some fairly significant economic changes and even social ones, such as ending what used to be called tourist apartheid, where Cubans themselves could never enter tourist facilities. They now can. That's been a big, huge psychological lift. Even if most Cubans can't afford a hotel, they can now enter it. Likewise, he's made it cell phones and computers and pressure cookers and all kinds of domestic items. You now can buy them. Again, you need to have the money. On the other hand, he has reined in the dissidents. Well, in some areas, he's opened it up because the internet has allowed greater access, but they have really sought to contain the internet. And he has appointed a man named Ramiro Valdez to be in charge of the internet and telecommunications. Now, this is a man who has a very scary reputation in Cuba. He goes back to the original Moncada attack. Granma has very old history with the Castros. But he was known as one of the most repressive figures in Cuban history. He was the architect of what was known as the New Man, in which people in the 60s were rounded up, say, for being gay or liberal or dissenting, and put in camps. This man is now hugely powerful in Raul Castro's government, and he handles issues that relate to intellectuals, journalists. He's in charge of the internet. And he has lived up to his reputation. There have been several roundups. Most recently, the blogger Yoani Sanchez says that she was picked up and roughed up. And the other day, her husband, Ronaldo Escobar, likewise.
Now, there were also officials in the regime who had been seen as potential rising stars and possible reformers, but some secretly taped conversations turned up and they were suddenly sidelined last year. Can you tell us what happened there?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. I think more than sidelined, I think would be accurate to say it was a purge. It was one of the most significant and largest purges in Cuban history since the revolution. And some of the figures were exceptionally prominent. The foreign minister of the country, Perez Roque, was taken out. The number three person, Carlos Laje, who handled all the financial issues, was taken out. Fidel Castro's own personal aide, Carlos Valenciaga, who announced to the world Castro's illness, was taken out. Very prominent people. Now, why were they taken out is the question that has been on everybody's mind. And one thing we know is that all these people were brought in by Fidel, and every one of their replacements is somebody who has been a loyalist to Raul.
Well, the other picture that comes out of your book is that the ones who are out seem to be younger, and the ones who've been brought in are older. It's kind of a gerontocracy down there. I mean, Raul himself is pushing 80. Isn't the stage being set for a succession crisis, just as they seem to have averted one now?
You're absolutely right. They have stacked the government and the army with men well into their 70s, in some cases in their 80s. And there's a real generational crisis, as Fidel Castro has talked about. Now, I have some bad news or good news, depending how you feel about this subject. There are more Castros in the works. They are not really going to be coming up from Fidel Castro's own family. His sons, and he mostly has sons, have picked up his intellectual bent and are mostly in the sciences and medicine, etc. Raul's family, however, has political ambitions, and they have very important jobs, several of them. One of them is his son, Alejandro, who is a colonel in the Ministry of Interior, who has a very important portfolio. He handles both intelligence and China. Hard to argue what could be more important in Cuba. There is a son-in-law who runs GAESA, which is the cash cow of the Cuban army. Now, one needs to understand that the Cuban army almost operates as the CEO of Cuba today. So that position, his son-in-law, is going to always be a key player in the foreseeable future.
We'll see more interfamilial transitions perhaps to come. You know, the health of Fidel Castro is guarded so closely, and just in the past week there was yet another rumor that perhaps he was dead now. Do you think that when he does finally pass on, will we know it?
We will know it eventually, but not right away. They will not tell us until they get all their ducks in order. Now, mind you, they have rehearsed for this from the very beginning. When I interviewed Fidel Castro, I guess, 93, 94, for Vanity Fair magazine, I asked him about the succession, and he said to me, he said, do not think for a minute that the mechanism of state will halt, even for a second, should I die. We have worked this out. And I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it back then, but you know what? He was telling the truth. When he became suddenly ill, they moved this right along to Raul. There was suddenly a huge police presence on the street. They had this military operation all ready, this contingency plans. So they have thought about this at great length. It is unlikely that he will be buried. I would put my money that he will be cremated and his ashes will be scattered over Pico Torquino, which is one of the mountains in the Sierra Maestra, which was one of his childhood haunts and was the area where he launched a lot of his guerrilla activities from.
Anne Louise Bardock is the author of Without Fidel, A Death Foretold in Miami, Havana, and Washington. Her previous book was Cuba Confidential. She joined us from NPR West. Thank you so much.
Thank you.